You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very, very first time tonight. Welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. Now, you need to make a habit out of it and be back every night, Monday through Friday. It's a great habit to get into. Well, one of the things we talk about frequently here on this channel is the many mysteries of Mars, and they just keep coming, I'll tell you. You know, the Mars Phoenix lander has just recently ended its mission. It landed near the North Pole of Mars, and conducted experiments, scooped up dirt, scooped up ice, and things like that. And you may remember that Dr. Peter Smith, who is the chief scientist on that mission down in Tucson, Arizona, made the statement at one point that that dirt that they scooped up, he said, is just like the dirt in your backyard. And you could probably grow asparagus in it. Well, then another group of scientists came along and said, no, wait a minute. When we cooked off some of that dirt, we found perchlorate, and that would probably preclude any life existing there. And I'm sure you remember that my response to that, the very day that came out, was, number one, it can't be perchlorate because when they cooked it off, it had no chlorine in it. It only had oxygen in it. And then they put it into a different lab on Phoenix Lander and did wet chemical tests and got the exact same results. Yet they persist in calling it perchlorate. Well, now Dr. Peter Smith is saying, you know what? We photographed little globs of water, little droplets of water on the one of the legs of the lander. And he said, you know, we would have thought that it would just evaporate immediately off into space. We didn't think that liquid water could exist because of the atmosphere, but there it is, and we photographed it. Well, the perchlorate group, they've come along and said, well, no, that's probably just kind of a strange reaction caused by the rockets and the heat and so forth hitting the perchlorate, and you know that's probably not really liquid water. And I want to point out again, you can't have perchlorate if you have no chlorine. It's called perchlorate, and without chlorine, that's not perchlorate. Don't know exactly what you might call it other than what they found, which was oxygen, lots of oxygen. And so the mysteries just keep coming. It's an exciting time, but at least you've got a group of scientists who are trying to get information out, and they're saying, well, you know, if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck and it swims like a duck, it's probably a duck. And I appreciate them for doing that. My hat is off to them. NASA has installed webcams on the International Space Station. You can now watch Earth go past underneath the International Space Station live over at NASA's website. We'll be back. More stuff about space and UFOs and things like that when we come back on the other side of this break. And welcome to the very first segment now of tonight's show. You know, it's always something, isn't it? Those of you who, you know, most of our audience joins us by means of radio or they listen on their computer, but a number of folks watch the show on our internet TV channel, and that first 5 minutes or so of the show, we could not get the thing to start. It was started here. But down at Ustream, it wouldn't start. Well, we finally got it, and we're in good shape now. My guest this evening is Michael Horn. He is the North American spokesman for Billy Meier. The Billy Meier UFO case, of course, is one of the most controversial UFO cases around. People are sharply divided in their opinions about Billy Meier himself, about his photos, films, of UFOs, and also about his writings. So, obviously, being the spokesperson for Billy Myers, it means that automatically Michael Horn is considered controversial as well. That's not necessarily a bad thing, is it? I mean, only the mundane escapes being controversial. Michael Horn is anything but mundane. Michael, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you, Kevin. Very nice to be here. Not only am I not mundane, I am Tuesdane.
Oh, my goodness. All right, look, usually I think when people talk with you, they probably want to get into all of the information about the UFOs and are the photos real? And we've done all that. You've been with us before and we've done all that. I've got some more kinds of things I'd like to ask you about.
Anything your listeners like.
Okay. By the way, folks, we started something new, and that is the way to get to our guest website. When you look at my webpage, just go over to kevinsmithshow.com. When you see the picture of Michael Horn, if you click on the guest picture, click on Michael Horn's picture, it will take you over to his website. It is www.theyfly.com. Three W's and then theyfly.com. And we might get into some of that other information. But Michael, first of all, I really would like for folks to kind of know a little bit of Michael Horn. We haven't done this before. Well, no, I'm not going to broadside you. I promise.
No, it's okay.
Here's the deal. When I said in your introduction that this is a controversial case, I don't think you would disagree with that. It is. People are divided about it. And absolutely, being the spokesman makes you controversial. So explain to us, why do you do it in the face of the controversy and in the face of really some, you've been subjected to some pretty in-your-face kind of ranting from time to time. So why do you do this?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't mean to sound silly about this, but even though it is an intensive thing to do, time-wise and energy-wise, in a sense, it's easy. And let me explain why, and if I seem to go afield here, draw me back.
Okay.
If I was trying to represent and indeed defend or explain and expound on something that I thought was false or that I could have been proven to me was false, I would have a very hard job because I would find myself tripping all over the place on contradictory information and, you know, false this and false that. When you have something that, after enduring 30 years of investigation, you can safely conclude, and I'm speaking for myself only, of course, that it's authentic and that it's, the man is telling the truth and that these things are happening, and et cetera, et cetera, that isn't hard to, well, it isn't hard to speak about it, because anybody can do what I did. That is, they can do the searches in information, they can check and find out, did this man say this? Did it accord with the facts? Where is the documentation on it? What can we know? How can we find out? I would say for a good 80% of the things that I deal with, almost anybody could find out for themselves whether it's true or not, whether I'm representing something that's accurate or not. And this is not something that, you know, I had planned to do in my life. I've done many things. I continue to do many things. I make films. I write music. I do all sorts of stuff. I teach seniors fitness programs. I mean, you name it. But when I first walked into a bookstore in 1979 in Los Angeles and saw Meyer's photos in a book, they struck me at that point as being real. And that is not what I base my conclusions on now, you know, 30 years later. It's all of that I've done in those years that have, you know, ensued to try to find out what the truth is here and to see if indeed there's something wicked or crooked or, you know, contaminated in some way. And I have done my best, and I've invited, as you know, I've invited the best top skeptics in the world to, you know, take their shots, but more importantly, to prove their claims that there's hoaxing involved. And to this date now, in, you know, in 2009, I will put it this way, their challenges have soundly been defeated. There isn't a one. We're talking top professional skeptics organizations, James Randi. They can't show any hoaxing here, and they did claim it. So,
all right, well, now, have you ever met Billy Meyer personally?
Oh, yeah, sure. I've been to Switzerland 10 times in 9 years. I've spent time with him on every visit. I'm looking forward to hopefully to seeing him again this year. I've met three of his children, actually. I've met people who have been involved with this for 30 years or more. And
all right,
I
well, let's,
know these people.
I've got a couple of questions here. I had not thought of until you mentioned his children. You know, I sit down at the microphone and each night, and in 95 countries, people are listening. And it's, you know, you think about how many people are out there listening. You know, that's phenomenal. But I have, there are three people on this planet that are closest to me. That's my three older children. And they hardly ever, I mean, rarely ever tune in, because to them, I'm just dad. You know? It's no big deal. I'm just dad. And, yeah, okay, he's got that radio show. How do Billy Meyer's children deal with him? I mean, is he just dad, or is it they have some recognition of the fact that he rocked the entire planet?
Yeah, well, you know, in our film, we have the film The Silent Revolution of Truth, and we interviewed one of his sons, and we also showed a film of his of the same son and other siblings when they were younger with their mother, who is now Billy's ex-wife. And he was, as a small boy, he was holding up a drawing or painting he did of one of the ships that he saw. And to this day, he and his brother both say, look, our father is telling the truth. We have witnessed this. We've been around this all our lives. It has been hard for us because we were ostracized as children. We were made fun of. We were ridiculed and harassed because our father was involved with this. And, you know, these were in the early days of this experience for them in the 1970s. They're living in a rundown farmhouse that he's renovating almost single-handedly, literally, man with one arm. They are, you know, there while dad is running off in all hours of the day and night in all weather on his little moped to have these contacts that he claims he has with people from another star system. He's taking his photographs and films, and as the world finds out, people start marching through their home, unannounced, willy-nilly, taking photographs, keeping things, you know, because Billy was not, he wasn't sophisticated in the ways of you know, gathering and keeping this evidence. There were things that were more important to him, the teaching, the things that he was learning from these people, the transcripts. So it was a very rough existence for the children and for the family, because people, you know, didn't respect their privacy, and to a degree today that many people still don't. It's just that there's a little better buffer system to keep them from marching through everybody's life over there. So his children speak in a very genuine way with, like, his son Atlantis, who's in the film, you know, is talking, and you can see there's a palpable, you know, sense of some pain and hurt involved, and that, you know, this is our life, and for better or for worse, you know, we go through this, and my father's a truthful man, and this is what everybody that knows Meyer, you know, that we interviewed, that we could find, has said. Sure, there's people that are detractors or attack or disgruntled, what have you, but even a skeptic in the village near Meyer, a man who, along with his wife, had been defaming Meyer for years, sent him a letter one day apologizing, along with a couple photos that this man had taken of one of the UFOs over Meyer's property, and said, I was out with my camera and I looked in the sky and I took these pictures, so now I have to tell you, I apologize to you, you're telling the truth, but please, I'm not giving you my name because my wife would kill me if she knows that I'm, you know, doing this. So it's a very...
All right, now, let's go back to the first time you met him.
Yeah.
And this is the question I had thought of. The first time you met Billy Meyer, obviously, had to have been at a point where you had been studying and researching his information, his photos, his writings, and had reached a point, I assume, where you were pretty much convinced the guy was telling the truth. And so you go over to meet him at that point, that first time. Was there any sort of reservation where you were saying, okay, now, you know, I just hope this guy doesn't disappoint me here because, so far I think he's right?
Well, actually not, because I didn't have expectations of how he was supposed to be. And if I had never met Billy, and most of the people in the world, certainly even those who are interested in this case, they won't meet him, and to be perfectly blunt about it, it's not important, but for me, I wanted to go because I knew other people that had gone and spent time there. I thought, well, why haven't I gotten off my butt all the years I've known about this and gone over it? It's been 21 years. I went over for the first time in the year 2000, and I can remember the two initial encounters that I had, and I say two rather than one because the first one was kind of funny. I had met another fellow that I'd been only in email contact with, guy from Texas named Mark, and Mark Campbell, another musician, and we got on the same plane in New York, connecting flight, went to Zurich, and as soon as we could, you know, get into town and get a car, we drove over and went to the place, and as we're walking up the road and we get close to the home center where Meyer lives and people, you know, work and all, Meyer came bursting through the door under the stub of his left arm. There's some books and his keys on a long chain dangling on his right side. He, you know, wears blue jeans, and he always seems to wear like a plaid work shirt, very unfancy, but very, you know, tidy. And Mark sees him, and right away he says to him, Billy, I want to thank you on behalf of all of humanity. He launches into one of these things, and Billy simply reached out his hand and shook it and said, oh, don't mention it, it's my duty, and off he went to do whatever his duty was at the moment. And it was like, I think the next day or day after that, I formally kind of met Billy, and he was with someone off to the side, and they called me over. I was working with some people, and he called me over to ask me a question. He spoke English well enough. We could understand each other. And here's the real payoff for me on this, Kevin. I'm standing a foot away from the man, you know, eye to eye, and I'm kind of giving him some information on something that was happening back in the States he wanted to know about. And I had this funny feeling that I was very consciously aware of, even while I was talking to him. And that was a feeling like, this guy kind of knows me. He gets me. I don't have to be anything particular, nothing fancy here, don't have to tap dance. It's almost like this was somebody that at least knew me for a long time. And I was trying to figure out how it was. You know, do I know him? Because it was so familiar and comfortable without any defense on his part or any projection. He wasn't giving me one of those silly guru smiles or anything. He was literally just a human being who was receptive to another human being. And it's always been that way when I've encountered him. I mean, I've seen him in different moods with people, but he seems to just have a general, direct, simple, plain presence that's relaxing to be around. I guess unless you're, you know, doing something crazy that he yells at you for, but just a person. He's not like some celebrity, and he's certainly among the people that live and work there. He's no celebrity. He's simply the guy that has the meetings, and everybody else has to, you know, they all pull their weight in their work. So I don't know if that explains it exactly, but it's kind of the truth of how my experience of him was and still is.
What made you decide to become the North American spokesperson for Billy Myers?
Well, what had happened is, I'll just take it back a ways. I had worked with a fellow named Randy Winters in the 1980s to make a video called The Pleiadian Connection, which is still out there in circulation some 20-something years later. And I used to come to Randy's presentations, and I was the entertainment. I would sing tongue-in-cheek New Age songs and stuff like that and do some comedy. But I also had read all the material that Randy had, and I had a different take on how to present it than the way Randy was presenting. And let me just say, I think Randy did a phenomenal job with presenting it. He's just a natural speaker and, you know, a very, very, very comfortable presenter. And I always loved his work, but I was disagreeing with the way in which he was presenting some of the information. It did not seem to me to be exactly what I thought was in there. So I started to do my own presentations, and after maybe 12, 13 years of doing them off and on, I thought, you know, I'm going to go over to Switzerland and meet Billy and see what this is like. It wasn't for a couple more years, probably around 2003 or 4, maybe it was, somewhere in there, that I said to him, I'd like to officially represent you, not just do my own thing here, which means that I will present your information and the, you know, the translations of it that you approve in English the way you want it presented, providing there's a couple little provisos here. Number one, I will not be paid by you so that it's voluntary. I don't pay you for the privilege, which they never asked for anyhow, of course. And the reason for this, the reason I want to do it voluntarily is because I don't know that everything in your material is true, and I may disagree with some of it. I may not know and have other opinions, and I want to be free as a person to not have to, like, toe a party line, and just because I'm representing you, say, it's all true, and this has to be so because Billy Myers said. And they understood right away. I said, well, of course, you know, you have to keep your own, you know, investigation going and your own discovery, and that would be fine. We will, you know, stay in communication so we can make sure that if a translation comes out from somebody, that it's at least authorized by Switzerland, and then I can post it on my website, I can discuss these things. But you're free to disagree, as I have, and just most people don't know that I've had disagreements about things because I don't know that they're right or wrong. Some things you cannot prove yet simply because, A, they either have possibly occurred in the far distant past to which we have no historical access yet. They have not yet occurred, that is, they're in the future, if they will occur, and or they deal with science that we do not yet have access to.
Michael,
might be some other things, but it's basically past, future kind of a situation.
Michael, we have a break coming up, and we'll continue right after the break. But one of the things, you just brought it up, one of the things about Billy Meyer that's perhaps, it sets him apart from a lot of other UFO witnesses and or experiencers, contactees, etc., and that is a large volume of information, and some of that contains prophecies, many of which you say have come true with great accuracy. And I want us to talk about those when we come back. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Michael Horn, and we are talking about the Billy Meyer case. Michael, are you still with me?
I think so. I think it's me.
Okay. Well, like I told you before the show, I've got you on a different phone system than I normally use, and so You know, I want to check, make sure I didn't lose you. All right.
No problem, as long as you can hear me.
One of the things that really sets Billy Myers apart, not that it's totally unique. There are other people who write messages from contacts they have with, they say, with extraterrestrials. But then Billy Myers has produced quite a volume of this material with quite a number of prophecies in there. And a prophecy is kind of a dangerous thing for someone if they're trying to hoax something, because we can just wait and then look back and see, did it happen? And you have pointed out, both on this show and other shows that I've heard you on, that Billy Myers has been very accurate. And by the way, you also have it on your website, that he's been very, very accurate with his prophecies. Give us some examples.
Sure. Well, you know, I think before you brought me on, you were talking about Mars, correct?
Yeah.
On my, and I'm at a disadvantage only in as much as I am not sitting in front of a computer tonight. But if people go to my homepage, theyfly.com, and they scroll down, there's a center column where we've got various kinds of headlines and things on evidence. They're going to see something about how did Meyer beat NASA by 32 years. And what's in there is, I'm going to try to remember the dates as well as I can without looking at something here that I don't have. I believe that I set out a press release on or about August 6th of last year. And it was in relation to the fact that scientists had discovered water on Mars, as you had mentioned, and that they mentioned that there was a hostile element in the soil that they referred to, as you said, as perchlorate. Whether or not it was perchlorate, I don't know. It's not the point. But at that I had been, about 2 weeks before that discovery was made, I was going through some of the old books containing Myers' conversations, the transcripts. And there was stuff in there about Mars, and I just happened to remember that, wait a minute, I was just reading this. So I went back and I found it. And it turns out that in July, I don't know if it was July 2nd or what, 1976, I think it was, 32 years before NASA discovered water on Mars, Meyer is in a conversation with the alleged extraterrestrial woman, Semyaze. They are, I think, on or above Mars, and she's mentioning that the scientists are going to discover water, then they're going to discover that the environment is hostile to life, and then she also mentions that they will then find microscopic, I think, or small floric and faunic life forms after all that. Now, that's 32 years ago, and you know that maybe just a few weeks ago, this last discovery of, life, they were talking about, I don't know if it was in the methane or something, they were finding evidences of some, primitive life forms or what have you. This is in one paragraph published by Meyer in 1976 in transcripts that I personally held in my hands in 1986 that are in books that were published by 1980, and I have those books, and we even have them on e-books for people that want to get copies of them because they're collector's items and they're terribly expensive, so they can get them, a lot cheaper through the e-book form from us. And here is information that corresponds sequentially with the discoveries that are made 32 years later by NASA scientists. I found information that Meyer had published about Io being the most volcanically active moon, actually the most volcanically active body in the solar system, something that he published 5 months before the Voyager probe got to Jupiter. And Wendell Stevens, who's the lead investigator on the case back starting in the 70s, had Meyer's documentation in his possession with all this and there was a lot more information on the specifics of Jupiter and Io and the, the kind of particles in the... Stevens has this in his possession on March 9th, 1979, and 3 days later, March 12th, 1979, NASA holds a news conference, and they say the most important discovery of our entire Voyager mission is that Io is the most volcanically active body in the solar system. Stevens happened to have taken the wise step of showing this information to two other professionals, a military man and the director of the Flandreau Planetarium in Tucson, and they signed off on all this stuff and put it away because it contained also 10 specific predictions of events that would occur, one of which had occurred by that time, but the rest of them occurred after Stevens had these documents. There is so much of this in the case. For instance, people can go and they can look at the 1958 letter posted on our website, wherein, I think it's number 6, Meyer foretells, I think, not only the fall of the Berlin Wall, but that the U.S. will have two wars with Iraq in the future, the second one conducted under the leadership of a president who would be the son of a former president. This is published in 1958, along with over 150 other things. And since that document has been on my site, some of the other predictions in there have come true, such as, I think it's number 39, that countries through financial mismanagement are going to begin to go bankrupt. This, in 1958, if you started to say that, you know, major countries are going to go bankrupt, nobody would pay attention to you. That was published then by Meyer. So many things. He named AIDS as a coming epidemic. He foretold the use of plastic credit cards for conducting transactions, that people would carry their telephones with them in their pockets, that homes would have televisions and computers. 1958, you can tell somebody there's going to be a computer in their home and that they're going to be interlinked around the world electronically. See,
yeah, listen, when was the first United States manned space flight? What was that, about 1960?
You mean the moon launch? Where they
No. The first man in space for the U.S.
I don't have the date on that. I can tell you that in 58, Meyer had written in that same document about the various rocket launches, the Russian launches, the U.S. launches, and he goes so far as to say that the one that, when the Americans claim to have walked on the moon, that this will be a hoax, but the other, they will succeed in landing on the moon, but it will not be the one they claim as, you know, as the first successful one. That will be a hoax. And they, years later, he describes how that was perpetrated and or by whom. And of course, that's a controversial claim and one that isn't exclusive to the Meyer case. I don't know whether that's true or not. I can't prove that. But for those people that, you know, want to know just what this guy's been writing and publishing for how long, it's going to knock your socks off. And there's one other thing, and go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say about that first space flight. I've been to the Smithsonian, and I have seen the computer that ran those Mercury. We had the Mercury space program, and then we had Gemini, then Apollo, and then the space shuttles. And the Mercury space program, those flights were controlled, or assisted at least, by computers. And I've seen the computer at the Smithsonian. It would fill this studio, and it was nowhere near as powerful as the old 286 computers we all used to have.
Yeah. Yep.
And he was in 1958 saying, "You'll have computers in your homes."
Yes. And he's just, you know, even more. I mean, you can read, if you start going through that prophecy and any of the other ones that are up there freely available, I might add, on my website, it's going to give a person pause. You know, I claim that the Meyer case is the most suppressed story in human history, because let's face it, if it's true, what can compare historically in magnitude to a man actually truthfully being in touch with human beings from another star system for now going on 60 years, almost 67 plus years? Yeah, it's mind-boggling. And when people say, look, Kevin, here's where I disagree with a lot of people in the UFO community. When people say, well, this other UFO contactee, I know of no other claimed UFO contactee that can actually prove that they are a UFO contactee. If the Meyer case is used as a standard of proof, and we might as well, it's the most attacked case, and the skeptics have all fallen all over themselves on this, I think anyone that says that they're a quote-unquote contactee with extraterrestrials should be able to meet the standard set. Let's see your photographic proof. Let's hear some recordings. Let's get some photo, film, video stuff. But Meyer got all his evidence way before the computer age, so he wasn't using home computers and Photoshop and digital effects. His photos were first taken in 1964 in India, and there's still a woman who was a witness to all of that, who saw Meyer, the ETs, and the ships. And she's a retired UN diplomat. So the more you dig into the Meyer case, the more you go, why haven't I heard about this? And then you realize, because the people that should have been doing what you're willing to do, to investigate, to explore, to say, okay, let's find out, they didn't do it. They suppressed it, they laughed it off, they allowed the disinformation and attacks by government and intelligence agencies to discredit it to be their reality, and so they wrote it off and snickered. These people have been trying to warn us for a long time about the very mess that we are now getting deeper and deeper and deeper into.
For me, the written things are far more impressive. And look, everybody's got their own taste, right? But for me, the written things are far more impressive than the photographs. Photographs and the movies are impressive, but I guess I am more captured by things like what we've just been talking about, what you've been telling us about, where far, far in advance of an event happening, he's giving details of the event. And I've read some of these predictions, and they're not in the vague, cloaked language of Nostradamus. They're just pretty much straightforward. And here's the deal. Here's what's going to happen. Here's what we're going to find. And far in advance. Now, to me, that's impressive. And the fact that he can document that these things were written and published long before the events happened.
Well, there's one that I've enjoyed, because I have friends, very good friends I've known for 30 years, and who are skeptics about, this case, everything. And it's a husband and wife, and he always says, you just show me something, you really prove something, show me. And I'm with you on this. I don't think that the photographs and all that stuff, real as they are, and I know they're real, but they're not as important as this. So I said to him one day, I said, okay, I'll bring over a book. And I said to him, how many planets are there in the solar system? What, anything beyond Pluto? And he says, well, when I was going to school, we were told clearly there's no planets beyond Pluto, and it was only recently, I think, scientists discovered them. I said, okay, now, do you see the copyright date on this book? And he said, yeah. And I said, now I'd like you to read this page. And Wendell Stevens is reporting in 1978 that Meyer informed him casually that there's two planets beyond Pluto that will be discovered around the time of the new millennium. Now, Meyer also wrote that in 1958, 20 years before. But Stevens wasn't there 20 years before, so when Stevens goes over, Meyer tells him that as well. That's in a copyrighted, dated, published book. There's no wiggle room on that. That is proof positive, especially when you take everything else that's in those books and you go, well, here's another one, here's another one, here's another one. Geez, we know that this is not somebody who can go and backdate a book that's been out for 25 years,
You are absolutely right. All right, we have to take a break, and we'll be back right after this break with more of Michael Horn. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Michael Horn. We'll get back to our discussion with Michael in just a moment. I got a bunch of flash messages from people saying, hey, what happened? All of a sudden the audio went out. It didn't go out here, and I was reading the flash messages and looking at all of the equipment, and everything looked fine. The audio was going out. Everything was as it was supposed to be. Then it just came back. So, obviously, we're getting help again tonight. Once you told me notified me that the audio had gone down. I checked over at Ustream, and sure enough, it was not getting audio, but it was leaving here. So it's a mystery, folks. But you'll see when you click on Watch Latest Show, or if you listen to the latest show, you'll see there's no blank in the audio. Everything was fine here. It's out there somewhere. I just appreciate all of the assistance we get. Okay, maybe someone doesn't want you talking about the Billy Meier case, Michael.
Well, we know that that's been the case more than once where people don't want me talking about the Billy Meier case, but hopefully, and I think you archive shows too, mm-hmm. So people will be able to, you know, catch what they may have missed in the original broadcast. But could I mention one thing quickly?
Sure.
I want to do?
Mm-hmm.
I want to give a free gift to any of your listeners who wants to get our film. And I'll just put it this way real quickly, and maybe I could say it again next hour. Anybody who hears the show during original broadcast or thereafter that gets our film or my other film, it's on my website, there's two films, get either film, and we're going to send you a compilation of translations, of excerpts from 120 different translations of Meier's material that cover tons of different areas. That normally is like $25, and it will be free. And the two films, either one film is only 15 and the other is 20, so whichever one you get, you're going to get something worth more than what you're going to pay. It's a new approach. I've decided during these tough economic times, we'll try to do a little give more than you get and see if people will then be able to benefit from that. So
good.
All they have to do is write the word free in their order, and they get it.
Okay. Well, there you have it, folks. I didn't know that Michael was going to do that. But the website to go to for that is theyfly.com. If you can't remember that, just go to my website and click on Michael's picture, and it will take you over to his website. And thank you for that. That's a wonderful offer.
Well, sure. You know, I know you've seen the film The Silent Revolution Truth, and mm-hmm. I want everybody to see it. It's an hour and a half documentary on the Meier case, fairly recent. We've got another 38 minutes of special features. That's only $20. And if they write the word free in their offer, when they get that film, or if they get our other film called Breaking the Silence, either one, we will send them a $25 free gift, and courtesy of my being able to appear again on your show.
Outstanding. Thank you for that. All right. We were talking about the prophecies that Meier has written down. Let me ask you this. Has Meier written any prophecies regarding disclosure? The disclosure by official disclosure that there are indeed extraterrestrial intelligent races visiting this Earth. Has he written anything about disclosure?
Well, let me answer it this way, because in the early transcripts, in the early conversations that Meier was having, especially with this woman, Semyaze, it was made clear that his contacts and his opportunities to film and photograph and all this were going to be deliberately provoking controversy that will ultimately lead in the uncover-up of information. Now, some of the details are quite different than what proponents of disclosure imagine them to be or think they should be. For instance, I 3 weeks ago had a conversation with Stephen Bassett, who has what's called the X Conference. And for many years running, I have almost pleaded with him to allow the Meier case to be presented.
Well, we've just lost your audio.
I'm sorry?
We just lost your audio for a few seconds.
Oh, okay. I can recap. Did you hear that I said that a few weeks ago I met with Stephen Bassett from
yeah.
the X Conference?
Mm-hmm.
And that for a number of years I have been trying to prevail on him to allow the Meier material to be presented at the X Conference in Washington, because it's not only the container of the best physical evidence of any UFO case, it's still ongoing. The man is still meeting with these people and getting information almost on a monthly basis. Stephen Bassett isn't interested in that. He thinks it's more important to carry on about UFO sightings and trying to parade witnesses who saw something in the sky. This, to me, we're all entitled to do what we want to do, and certainly Stephen is, but to me, it's a tremendous waste of opportunity and resources, because he could take it, you know, let's say that they don't particularly want to see me up there presenting it. Take the Meyer case and present it and say, here it is. This stuff has now been vetted. Every skeptical challenge has failed. The prophecies and predictions are shown to be accurate. You know, practically weekly there's a new corroboration. This is our battering ram for disclosure, because ultimately I think it will be. But the disclosure people want to make it happen their way. They think that they can prevail on the government magically to reveal what they want them to reveal. And my answer is, why are you trying to play Big Daddy's game? The government, quote-unquote, whatever that may be, will run you in circles any way it wants. It will only give you what it wants because you don't really have anything that you can force them with. All this talk about benevolent extraterrestrials walking among us, and there's zero evidence for that. Had there been real evidence and proof for that, I'd stand back and let them go.
So you don't think that there are benevolent extraterrestrials, or you think that there are, but they're not walking among us?
Well, I would say the Meyer case is good proof that there are, but I would almost guarantee you, and I'd be willing to put up a $5 wager here, there's none of them are walking around on this crazy planet. It's so illogical to think that advanced races of people who have mastered longevity and space travel and peace, a long-sought-after commodity, would put themselves on a world with 160 wars where people in their own cities and towns are invading each other's homes and shooting each other. For what? So they can prove that they exist? This is where our thinking is so bad and so deficient with these various disclosure and exopolitics movements. They are kidding themselves so badly, and they definitely don't want the Meyer case to, quote-unquote, steal their thunder, because suddenly they have to go and do other work. What would all of the people screaming about disclosure and benevolent extraterrestrials walking among us do if the Meyer case emerged and got the press that it deserves, you know, for the sake of humanity, that it got the scientific recognition with more than just a few highly credible scientists who know it's real? What would these people do? Are they going to think that they're still going to be the ambassadors to ETs that are coming down any minute with open arms to greet them? This is a hallucination that is so dangerous to us in these times when our very lives and the lives of our families and our countrymen and other people in the world are literally at stake. We cannot make this government pull itself out of Iraq. You think you're going to force the government to admit what? That Roswell happened? Roswell is the favorite UFO case of the government because there's nothing there. You cannot find one trace. You can say, well, they back-engineered and we've got Kevlar or whatever the heck. Prove it. You can't. But the Meyer case is still going on. People have taken photographs as recently as a couple years ago. The science is being validated. But all of these experts who've never even gone to meet Meyer, I might add, don't want to touch it because they have got careers now in ufology. And that's why I do my work for free. Yes, I even made my films at my own expense. So if somebody buys something, thank you very much. I'll start to make my money back. But I do this for free because this is the most important story in human history, in my opinion. And nothing should stand in the way of every man and woman on the earth that wants to know about this. Like the people in the 95 countries that you, Kevin Smith, are reaching, they should have access to this, and they should be able to find out for themselves, and then they can ask, why isn't disclosure and ex-conference and exopolitics, why aren't these people putting this at the top of their list? And the answer is very simple. It's a three-letter word, and it's called ego. And people can accuse me of me having mine, and I'll admit to it, I do, but I'm not going to obstruct the most important story in history, where people have been describing for us for 60-something years what's coming our way and what's next and how to get out of it, and it gets suppressed because people want to babble about benevolent extraterrestrials. So what?
All right, look, we have a break coming up here in just a few seconds. And when we come back, I'm going to open the telephone line so that our audience can call in, and if they have a question or a comment, they'll be able to speak with you directly. But there are a couple of, before I'll tell the audience, before I open the phones, a couple of other quick questions I've got for Michael Horn, and then we'll open up the telephone lines. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Michael Horn, and we're talking about the Billy Myers case. Michael, before I open the telephone lines, which, folks, I am going to do in just a moment, but one more thing I really want to cover with you. Has Billy Meier written anything about, I'm sure that you have heard of Planet X, or some people call it Nibiru. Did he write anything about an incoming planet?
Yes. As a matter of fact, on my website, I had posted, as I say, I'm not in front of it right now, but I have an article, I think it's called There Is No Planet X, and then there's an article about the red meteor. Nibiru, Meyer wrote about Nibiru as far back as the 1970s and said that it was an uninhabited body, kind of like a comet or something. It never was a planet that brought extraterrestrials here. It simply has a cycle through our solar system of, I think, every 3,600 years, and that this whole thing that this is Planet X and 2012 and all, it's not accurate. And 2012, we get hung up on the date because that was the end of the Mayan calendar. The histories that were given to Meyer talk about the Mayan having died off due to drought and famine and all sorts of things. They never got around to making their next calendar. But we tend to romanticize things that we don't have enough knowledge on. The Mayan also had a couple of periods when they were in tremendous trouble. They literally had to cannibalize their own population when there was famine going on. Very unromantic realities according to the Mayer information. However, the red meteor, and I remember reading this in 1986, they said there is this object that is coming our way, and it will, unless our scientists get together, it will hit this planet either in 2026 or 2039, if I'm remembering correctly on the dates here. I could be off, but it's on my website. And Meyer was told that our scientists now know about this object. It's called Apophis, I think, and that the Pleiaren said to him, your scientists need to prepare so that they can detonate a nuclear, you know, an A-bomb type of explosion in the vicinity of this object, not to break it up, because that would cause enormous damage here when all these pieces hit us, but rather to deflect it from its orbit. And we have maybe 20 years to get this going. If we don't, it's going to strike, I think they said, between the North Sea and the Black Sea. It will tear right through the crust of the Earth. It will sink land masses. It will cause, like a new continent part to rise. It will decimate the atmosphere and kill millions of people, and it's preventable. But they have written it as a near prediction because they see that humanity doesn't want to take the hint and prevent itself from things that are preventable and to prevent tremendous loss of life, such as will occur when the La Palma volcano erupts in the Canary Islands off the west coast of Africa, which even our scientists now know will erupt. What they're not admitting is that this will produce a tsunami that will clean the clock of our eastern seaboard, penetrating up to 12 miles inland, losing 20 to 30 million citizens living, people living in those areas, unless we prepare and have evacuation routes and things that you don't hear about while everybody's worrying about the latest basketball or football game or something like that.
Well, there's an example that I use, Michael, that I think is apropos. It's the ostrich, you know, the stereotypical yes. ostrich with its head in the sand. But always remember, when you have your head in the sand, just what part of you have in the air.
There it is.
Yeah. Let's go to the telephone line. The telephone lines are open. If you are able to call without having to pay for long distance, please call 623-444-5889. If you have to pay long distance when you call, then use our toll-free number, 888-223-4599. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. This is Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
Hi. I was wondering, this is a guest that I mentioned that you tried to get a hold of. I was wondering if he could verify... his name's George Green. Did he have any dealings with Michael?
Here's what I can tell you. I have only spoken with George Green once myself, and that was on the phone. According to Meyer and his organization, George Green, who had indeed gone to Switzerland to meet Meyer and was over there at some point, is making completely false claims about himself being a contactee, about him ever having met or interacted with these extraterrestrials at all. George Green has, according again to the Meyer people, stolen the Talmud Emmanuel and changed it and published it under his own publishing house, which is a copyright violation. They consider him to be a fraud and a charlatan. It's up to people to decide for themselves, you know, what's up with that. I don't have enough personal experience with him to say from my own experience one way or the other, but I can unabashedly tell you that they consider him to be a fraud and a charlatan.
Yeah, I just I listened to it. He had a seminar, and he seemed to be quite impressive. He seems like he has a who's dialogue up from what he came from. You know, there ain't much he ain't done, supposedly, but according to him, you know. And I heard Shirley MacLaine had some stuff to do with him, with Billy. Was that true?
Shirley MacLaine had indeed gone to Switzerland and met with Meyer and spent, I think, a couple weeks over there and had recorded either on tape recorders or in writing a lot of information from, you know, Billy's explanations and the information he gave her. And according to Meyer and the people in Switzerland, she took a lot of this and published it without giving, accrediting, you know, Meyer as the source, and changed it around so that it could be part of her novels or books as if it were her experience. That's what they say. I've been interviewed by Shirley MacLaine. I don't have any personal firsthand knowledge one way or the other. One of the things to remember about people that claim to be in touch with the extraterrestrials that Meyer's in touch with is simply this. Not even his children, his wife, or his closest friends were allowed contact with these people. Very simply, they figure if they're going to let one person, then they have to let everybody, and then they've lost control of their real purpose, which is to give us this information. So the people, whether it's George Green, Shirley MacLaine, or Joe Blow, that claims that they're in touch with these people, they're channeling them, what have you, according to the Meyer material, none of that is true, and that would go for Barbara Marciniak and Barbara Ann Clow and all the rest.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I just trying to find out, you know, if any of this stuff is true. It's the only way I can know if somebody else knows about it, and I appreciate your comments. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Okay, folks, the telephone number 623-444-5889. If you have to pay long distance, don't. Use our toll-free number, 888-223-4599. All right, caller, hang on just one moment, and let me give the numbers again because I think I gave the wrong numbers. Maybe I did it right, but I'm an old guy. I get things wrong sometimes. 623-444-5889 is the regular telephone number. The toll-free number, 888-223-4599, is the toll-free number. And if you're outside of the United States or outside of Canada, those numbers will work, but you can also send us a flash message by going over to my website and just scroll down, and you'll see link. It's green, and it says flash message. You can send me a flash message, all right? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Okay, Kevin, speak up good and loud for us.
Is my phone being bad on me again?
Very muffled, but I have turned you up a little bit.
Okay, it might have been my voice.
All right.
Hello, Michael.
Hi.
I would strongly say that Billy Meyer's meetings with extraterrestrials, with the Pleiadians, is very, very true. However, I don't know, what are your thoughts on the tens of thousands of people that have reported abductions by the Greys? And also, many of these people, one of them, I know by name Debbie Jordan, who is also known in Bud Hopkins' book as... what was it? I forget the pseudonym she went under in the book, but she claimed that not only were there the Greys, but there were also humans that also matched the description of the ones that Billy Meyer has been in contact with. What about those?
Sure. Let me try to answer this, and I'm going to be very emphatic about this. This is the information as it comes from Meyer, and he alleges from his contact people. The so-called abductions are not, for the greater part, having anything to do with extraterrestrials. There have been, according again to Meyer and his people, some of these contact exams that were conducted by curious space races who put the people back and went on their way. The majority of this is secret military operations, psyops, designed to create fear, designed to perpetuate agendas, whatever they may be. I'm not privy to them, and I'm not much of a conspiracy guy, but I'm reporting to you what Meyer has said. So a lot of this can be done with drugs, sophisticated forms of hypnosis. There are elements of the CIA, for instance, that have alternative type crafts. People can be altered to look like the so-called Greys surgically. Meyer told me this stuff, and I was astounded. So you can have others that look like supposed, quote-unquote, Nordics or this or that. The whole idea of the Zeta Reticulum of the little Greys comes about from the report of bodies found at crashes in the 40s and maybe early 50s. What we're told in the Meyer case is that, indeed, there were crashes such as Roswell. There were perhaps 8 or 9 where recoveries of crashed disks were made in different locations, including outside the U.S., and that in the cases where these bodies were found, these were androids. These were biological entities created by the actual extraterrestrials who themselves didn't pilot those craft. And so you've got a prototype from which disinformation can be made, bug-eyed gray beings abducting people and babies and all the rest. If the logic, and we do have, if you do a search on my website for free about UFOs or abductions or whatever, you're going to find a big article where they explain this, and they also say, look, the logic would tell you that if all these people were really being abducted and or impregnated by extraterrestrials, that, you know, where are all the babies and all the rest of this stuff? I won't try to go through the whole thing, but the concise answer is they are emphatic that this is, for the most part, a military op type of thing. It is a disinformation campaign, and it's tied in very much with wanting to create a negative image and agenda. So also, if a fake ET UFO attack gets launched, people can be easily controlled, martial law, fear, and all of that.
All right, thanks, Kevin, for the telephone call. The telephone number is 623-444-5889, or the toll-free number, 888-223-4599. Now, you see, when even among, maybe especially among UFO enthusiasts, when you say things like what we've been discussing and things like you've been saying that run counter to what we normally hear, then that's controversial. Even among UFO enthusiasts. And the reason I point that out, and I think it's important to point it out, is that just because something is counter to what the majority have heard or believe doesn't mean it's not true. It may be true, I mean, the majority at one time believed the Earth was flat, and just one guy said, hang on, it's round. He was definitely in a minority, but he was definitely the only one right. So it is possible, and just because it's controversial doesn't mean we shouldn't think about this. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Mark from Ohio.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Michael.
Hello.
I have watched his Rain to Winners videos on Billy Myers so many times I couldn't even count. I have three quick topics in the Myers case that I'd like for you to cover, and then I'll take the answer off the air. Can you describe the large motherships called spacers? Could you also comment on the history of the human race going back to the Lyrian star system? And finally, can you talk about the human reincarnation cycle? Thanks, I'll take the answer off the air.
Okay.
Sure. Three interesting things. One of the great spacers, one of the shapes of one they have, and they're even in some of the books, there's a photograph Meyer took of it, I think, orbiting outside of Jupiter. It's a huge, round, you know, globular shape with three struts extending down from it with small globes on those ends, and then a long tower type of strut going up with a kind of globe command center structure on it. And Meyer said, I think this was an object that's actually some 10 miles in diameter or more. And it's one of the kinds of ships they have. On board this craft, there is nature. They have gardens, and they have they grow food, and they have science things. It's like a planet. It's a small planet on which well over 100-some thousand people live, and many of the people apparently will live most of their lives on this type of a craft, and they will spend a lot of time traveling to different parts of the universe on different particular missions, if you will. I can't do much better than that, although Meyer did describe a command council inside. He described androids that walked around and performed functions, a human figure, like from the torso up with arms that was virtually built in to a like a council of some form that operated things. He said it was just an astounding thing. All of these things were way beyond his his familiarity with anything technological. The history of the human race in the Silent Revolution of Truth that I'm promoting to people so that I can give them another free $25 gift, go with it. We have a whole section in there, Kevin and was it Mark from Ohio? I'm sorry. That section is about, I think, 13 minutes or so, maybe a little more, with the explanation of the origins of the human race in this universe, going back actually billions of years and then into the millions of years, where they were coming from, where the Lyrian civilizations originated and then travels into the Sirius star system, the fact that in this universe the original creation had over 42 million human races, 343 different skin colorations, lots of very interesting information that's covered in depth by one of the Swiss who knows this information well, and we interviewed him, and so you'll see him speaking it, and then we have the English language translation running over it. You're not distracted by the German if you're an English speaker. And there's a tremendous amount of information there that I think you'd enjoy. Reincarnation, they claim it's a fact of life, and as I say in my film, that means don't worry about dying because you'll live through it. And we don't experience this. Our personalities don't have a sense of this because the eternal part of us, the human spirit, which is located deep within the structure of the brain and is different than the soul. The soul, they say, is a kind of temporal construct. For each lifetime, it comes into formation, basically located around the solar plexus, and it dissolves after death. The spirit, the human spirit, is the eternal and immortal part of us that reincarnates countless millions of times in the course of evolution, that we cannot even really imagine it. And we will be man and woman and, red, white, black, yellow, brown, maybe 340 other skin colors as well as we evolve through the universe. But you always reincarnate on the planet on which you die. You don't float around the universe willy-nilly. There's a great deal of structure and order to life at every level. And this is not at all a religious matter. There's nothing to believe in here.
this is information. And again, this falls in the category of something that I cannot prove one way or the other, and I dare say nobody listening to the show can prove it one way or the other. We may believe it or accept it or not, but when you get familiar with the teaching, the spiritual teaching, which you can for free on my website, whole section there, you'll learn about what they say about the human spirit, how it evolves, what it's about, the connection to creation and nature, and it's very deep and very fascinating information, and it's understandable.
You know, one of the really tough parts of this has to be the almost inbred, innate, inseparable latching on to religion that we humans do. And for instance, and you've heard me talk in this show, you've heard the ads about the upcoming seminar, where I simply take Genesis and I don't try to prove that it's true or that it's not true. All we do is take Genesis and talk about what does it actually say? What do these words say? It's written with words and they have definitions. What does it say? And I get email from people. In fact, I had a telephone conversation today with someone who said, well, okay, I guess if you don't believe the church story of creation, then you think Darwin has more evidence on his side. I said, no, you're both wrong. You know, Darwin got it wrong, and the church story is not accurate, at least according to Genesis. And but here's my point. There's so much religion coursing through the veins of even people who say they're not religious that they can't separate in their own minds religion from something that is just information. Because if it talks about something that their religion talks about, then they think it's religious. You follow what I'm saying? If the information mentions something that their religion also mentions.
In terms of the Meyer case, they claim categorically that Darwin is not only wrong, but that he hoaxed a lot of his evidence, and they explain it. It's in the film. People would probably be very interested in this. And furthermore, I say to people that come at me with religious arguments, you have to understand that each and every religion on this planet rests on a premise which is patently illogical, childishly inadmissible in any courtroom, any school, any institution of higher learning. And here's the premise. What's in this book is true because this book says it's true. That is the only evidence that they have that anyone that subscribes to any religion can produce. People can say, well, I had this experience of that. That's great, but we know that, you know, that's going to get torn apart in any format. The religious premise of it's true because it's in a book, if we think about that dispassionately and objectively, we have to reject that. We have to say, maybe it's true, but it's not true just because it's in a book.
Yeah, and that's the point.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the point.
In the Meyer case, they never have ever said that anybody should believe any of it, and they know that we're not in a position where we can prove or disprove, but they give histories and origins of this universe, of life in it, of how evolution works and things. It goes back literally billions and billions of years. It exceeds what our scientists even know. This universe, according to the Pleiaron, is 46 trillion years old already. That is not in our scientific math. And they say, well, of course your scientists don't know it, because the original material, the original physical materials of creation, different stars and planets, whatever, those have long gone back to energy form, because you're talking trillions of years ago. So naturally you can't find that evidence, and your scientists just think they always know more than they do. In time, we'll start to realize, A, how little we know, and B, how much we can start to learn.
Well, I certainly agree with that. I think, you know, if you take everything that is known and pile it up, it's microscopic compared to what there is yet to know. We have to take a break, and we'll be back. More with my guest, Michael Horn, and your telephone calls right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Michael Horn, and we're talking about all things Billy Meier. Now, Michael, we have a feature here on the show, you heard me mention it earlier, called Flash Messages. And Flash Messages are simply, it's a special email system I set up, so that people who live outside of the United States and outside of Canada can participate in the show without having to make an international long-distance call. And I've got one here from Andrew in Australia, and it says, "Interesting to hear you mention your view of the abduction theory. In light of the Vatican saying there may be intelligent life, etc., what are your feelings about Jesuit involvement, etc., in the New World Order agenda, along with other secret societies which form the Illuminati?"
Well, to be perfectly honest, I don't know much about that kind of stuff. I know that Meier has written a bit about these things where he's actually downplayed the importance of some of the Illuminati-type things, and it said your real conspiracies are in, you know, banking, military, industrial, secret services, you know, that foment trouble in different countries and create wars, and that these things are, you know, at the heart of a lot of this trouble. And so while there are, you know, many things that are said and written about the Jesuits and other orders, I personally do not have any information. I can tell you this, that the Pleiaron considered the most negative location on the planet to be the area of the Vatican. And they've also, Meier long ago, published information about when Vesuvius erupts, how it will decimate that area, even though the experts say, well, that's silly because Vesuvius is close to Naples. And some years ago I found an article that corroborated what Meier had published years and years ago, and that is that the magma chambers underneath Vesuvius extend quite a ways, hundreds of kilometers, so it's not at all unlikely that a certain type of eruption will produce devastation in an area, you know, near Rome, where it wouldn't normally be anticipated. And I know it's a little off the mark, but I have nothing more I can contribute regarding the Jesuits for Andrew.
All right, the telephone lines are open. The if you can call without it costing you for long distance, please use this number, 623-444-5889. If it will cost you long distance, don't spend it. Use our toll-free number, and that number is 888-223-4599. Now, if you forget those numbers, take a look at your video screen. If you're watching the show, it's on the screen, 623-444-5889, or toll-free at 888-223-4599. Michael, you know, one of the things that always amazes me when you're on this show, you know, I see and am fully aware of the controversy that attends your way. And yet, you don't sound radical when you're on this show. Are you radical?
Well, you know, I don't think so. But it's a funny thing because when I've been involved in the hottest and heaviest debates with the skeptics, and there are online forums where they have, you know, specific forums devoted to attacking the Meier case and me that go on for literally dozens of pages. I noticed one was over 100 pages. They're full of, you know, there's a lot of vitriol and mainly unsubstantiated stuff, people claiming this and claiming that and attacking Meier or attacking me as his representative or whatever. So I'm not shy about giving as good as I can get, but anytime people want to enter into rational discussion, even if their views are diametrically opposed, if we can conduct the discussion based on evidence and facts and, you know, we can express our opinions, I much prefer peace and harmony. I'm not at all uncomfortable with a really good scrap, but it's more productive to be able to elevate the conversation. And, for instance, you may or may not agree with everything in the Meyer case, and you can challenge it, but you do so in a way that affords me the opportunity to at least answer. Some shows that I had been on years past were less than kind about that kind of thing.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Debbie from Columbus.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi. I just wanted to tell Michael, I saw him a couple of years ago at the UFO World Congress, and I was just very taken by his talk about Billy Meyer. I've since gone on to look at some of Billy's works, and I'm just very impressed by it. Michael, what I wanted to ask was, are there any new predictions that Sannyasi or any of the Pleiadians have given to Billy recently?
Well, yeah, I could put it like this, and hi, Debbie, and perhaps if I saw your face, I might remember speaking with you or something, but hi, and thank you. I'm glad you're interested in the material. Basically, at this point, and going back at least a year or so, they have said that we are going to face tremendous geophysical upheavals, and in a recent thing that I've posted on my website, if you read the top headline area there, there's some information in it, in one of the top stories on monitoring of volcanoes, and what Meyer was told was, your scientists already have the technology to monitor the seismic activity in such a way as to exactly predict when a volcano may erupt, which could, you know, save countless numbers of lives, and they're telling him this for a reason, because they have long said that we are going to face mega quakes, storms of all forms and under all names, hurricanes, tornadoes, all sorts of things that are going to be unbelievably devastating. There will be volcanic eruptions, all this stuff, mainly because of the mismanagement of the Earth by the overpopulated population. Because they see overpopulation as our core issue, that we just are rapidly consuming every resource, we're on top of each other fighting for it, it will only get worse. They have said that the oil reserves are already depleted, that in the near future we're going to see again the rise of the petroleum prices to the degree that eventually it will be unaffordable. It will affect transport, international and domestic. It'll affect travel, of course. It'll affect the transportation of food. There will be, I mean, I'm giving you the grim stuff that they're saying. This is just cause and effect, because people are just not taking responsibility, and they push these agendas. Global warming is a fact of life. It happens naturally, but in our case now, it's 3-to-1 human caused. We've cut down the rainforest. We've upset the balance of nature. So they're saying, you know, some of this is unavoidable. You're going to have this because you haven't listened. Some of it you could still alter if you would just get your scientists and your so-called leaders to stop looking always for more money and more power and do their, you know, be responsible, because these things are coming. They could be foreseen by anybody that contemplates nature and, you know, our circumstances on the planet. So, yeah, there's a lot here. And, again, I've posted a ton of it for free up on the site so people can go through this. And there is a forum where people all over the world, in English as well as in German, are discussing this material and coming together and trying to, you know, do things that are constructive. I want to post a link on my site. I found a site where a guy has something called a square foot garden that you can build in a backyard that doesn't require.
I saw that. I saw the videos on that.
Yeah, brilliant.
Absolutely fantastic.
You see,
well, we definitely need to start thinking about these things, because there's going to, as you said, there are major problems already happening, and, you know, I belong to a number of different discussion groups, and we talk about these things, and our governments really have to wake up. Our governments and our scientists have to wake up and become aware of this, because if we don't, this is all we have right now. The Earth Mother is all we have, and if we destroy her, we destroy ourselves in the process.
Ourselves. Well, you know, there's a Russian fellow who recently has been controversial because he talked about, he saw the collapse of the U.S., civil wars in the country would break up in six territories. I think maybe, I don't know if either or both of you saw that. It's been on the Internet and it's been in the news. He's just about 20 years late, because in 1981, Meyer said, and published, I read it in 86, I laughed, he said, in the future, the U.S. will have two civil wars and will break up into five territories. Look at what's happening with, you know, all these domestic issues, boiling them down to state issues, overtaxation,
I don't know what you all think of the policies in Washington, but I've never heard of anything as ridiculous in my life as pouring all your money down a black hole thinking it's going to save your society. We're in for a very bad time. And it's because people have been asleep at the wheel, or they've got their iPods turned up too loud, they're watching too many sports things and entertaining themselves, and we're forgetting the core of this whole case. The Meyer case boils down to self-responsibility. Mm-hmm. We've abdicated. We've given it to gods and saints and masters and ETs and angels and everything outside of us when we, as you're saying, this is all we got here, Mother Earth, and we're not being good stewards of it. We're not taking care of ourselves, so we will get the consequence. And that's apparently how humanity seems to prefer to learn, which isn't my way. It's a rather painful way to go.
Debbie, thank you so much for the call. Interesting question and comment. You know, one of the things that is really important for people, I think, for people to think about is that, and you know, the material you have on your website makes this statement as well, that a prophecy is not written in stone. The prophecy will happen just as it, according to your website, the prophecy will happen just as it is given unless we change actions and directions. And so we are capable of making a prophecy not come true. We're capable of altering the direction that we're going. We don't, then this is the prophecy.
That's right. If you do this, this is the result you get. If you don't do this, you get a different result. And it is literally that simple. And quite frankly, a very ancient teaching that I think actually originated with Confucius and it can be found in every religion is do unto others as you would have others do unto you. That's the law of cause and effect on the very personal level. And prophecies are nothing more than the use of the law of cause and effect to project outcomes based on information that's known. We have all sorts of people that do that. We call them weathermen, stock analysts. They do it to varying degrees of accuracy. But you've got, you know, architects, engineers, anybody that projects an outcome, designs something, says it will be thus and so based on this information. And in this case, in the Meyer case, and in all of the previous contact cases in this lineage that go back thousands of years, they have been trying to help alert humankind to the error of our ways and what we're going to get from it. So it's not about believing. It's about thinking and taking responsibility. And it's, in my opinion, it's far more productive to immerse oneself in this material to find out what is so and what isn't so to your satisfaction than it is for people to think about aliens abducting them for their genetic material and walking amongst us and all this fantasy stuff that isn't going to do a darn thing for us.
We're coming up on a break, and there won't be time for you to answer this. But when we come back from the break, you know, we've been talking, you've mentioned several times the Pleiarians, and, of course, that's the name of the race of the extraterrestrials that have been talking with Billy Myers. And what I want us to do when we come back is get you to tell us what you can about the Pleiarians, where they come from, who are they, and why do they care? Why, you know, let's get into that a little bit. Why do they even give a rip about what we do and whether we survive or not? We'll do that when we come back. We'll be back right after this, folks. Welcome back. My guest this evening is Michael Horn, and he is the North American spokesman for Billy Myers and for the Billy Myers case. And before we went to break, I said, let's talk about the Pleiarians. Now, let me say to our listeners that the telephone lines are open. 623-444-5889. Or if you have to pay long distance, use the toll-free number, 888-223-4599. What about the Playarns, Michael? Who are they? Where
sure.
are they from?
The kind of short version of it is this. These are human beings who live in a star system that's about 500 light years from here. They're physical human beings. They simply are more advanced, more developed. So you could say their vibratory rate is higher than ours. They look the same as we do, but we're not compatible energetically because we're still in a great deal more of the kinds of things that are connected to violence and aggression, and they claim that they have left that behind. They came from a long history of it, too, but they don't dwell there anymore. Their interest in us, they say, is because their own forefathers, millennia ago, were in many cases the very gods of our history. They represented themselves as the creators of all that was, and they set in motion things that became our religions and that misled us. They have what they call a self-obligated mission to try to assist us in a somewhat oblique way where we can take this information and help ourselves to get out of our mess where they don't, again, interfere with us, which in a world with 7.5 billion people would have tremendous consequences, largely bad consequences. And so they will not land. There will be no contacts or conversations, and all of the nice people from exopolitics might as well get some other jobs. They're not going to be meeting them out in the desert anywhere. And we have the responsibility for ourselves to take, let's say, this information from the Meyer case, to research it, to see what works for us, if it's valid, if it rings true, and if it can help us to help ourselves, then their mission will not have been in vain. So we won't know much more about them for maybe another, 800 years, when it's possible then that our world, the people of our world, will be at a level to interact with them much more as equals. Right now, we could not interact with them. There's no possible way. And can I just pop out my free offer for your people one more time, Kevin?
Sure.
I want to give each and every listener that wants to have our film, The Silent Revolution of Truth, or that goes and gets our film called Breaking the Silence, I want them to have a free disc, a free CD that has virtually a small book of translations of Meyer's material into English that they will be able to read for hours and hours and hours. All they have to do is order either film and put the word free in the order, and it's theirs. That's enough of that. But if there's anything more about the Playaran that I didn't answer there...
Well, I guess my question... final question about the Playarans would be, obviously, wherever they are from, they're not there now, at least the ones meeting with Billy Myers. Where are they staying? Where
do they stay?
Yeah, where do they hang out?
Well, when for a long time there were bases on this earth inaccessible to us. One was high in the Swiss Alps somewhere. It has since been closed up, as have the two other bases that their people maintained here. So it's kind of like, you know, a dead issue. We'll never find the remnants of those bases. But they claim that they had them here for the long period of time, that they were involved in trying to set this mission, if you will, in motion and to complete it. So at most, they only have a two-person crew that has a mission of just simply being in orbit around the planet. I don't know how often they change the shift. And they have unmanned devices that gather information and that beam it back, and they analyze information. They have obviously very sophisticated computer equipment that we can only imagine. And they will go and visit Billy, and I think they visit him, you could say, almost every month at least once. They will have a personal contact with him. They will come in their and beam down into his office, and then they will beam back up into their ships. On some occasions, they still will take him on their ships and go somewhere. Sometimes he finds it.
Well, I guess it was to hope too much, was it not? I thought we would make it through, but now, you know, we're talking about actual visitation. And I guess that's maybe is not permitted. What do you think? All right. Well, we'll see what we can do here. And we'll see if we can get Michael back on the line here. And that's not going to be too difficult to do. Let's see if we can do this. Yeah, even with a brand new different setup, you know, there you go, huh? All right, Michael, are you back with us? I guess not. All right, let's try this again. Well, I thought we would get all the way through the show without that happening. But I think it's interesting to note where it happened. Are you back with me, Michael?
Yes.
Yeah, well, you start talking about extraterrestrials beaming into somebody's office and we get cut off.
Something.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay, let's talk about it. We already brought it up. So they're beaming into his office. They're talking to him. He goes on the ship with them sometimes.
And there are also people who have seen them in his office. And that was purely accidental because they try to not be seen. They've been seen in his office, and they've been seen in the area around where he was going to have a meeting with him. So there are people there who are very straight people, I might add. These are very nice, you know, straight-ahead Swiss and German people. And they've seen these people, and they can at least attest to that it was nobody they knew dressed in this long outfit with the flowing beard and the white cape or whatever it was. But, again, that's just anecdotal stuff. I can't prove that stuff. But, you know, we ask the question, does he have contacts? What do they do? And this is, you know, the best we can do is give that information. The real proof is in the pudding. Is the information proving to be true? Unfortunately, it is.
Mm-hmm. All right. The telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, 623-444-5889. And the toll-free number, 888-223-4599. Or if you're outside of the United States, outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message. And you simply do that by going over to my website. Scroll down. You'll see right under the picture of Michael Horn, you'll see a link. The letters are green, and it says flash message. So you can click that and send me a flash message. If you're outside of the USA and Canada, you're not in Canada, you're not in the USA, you can send me a flash message. I'll read it on the air. So tell me a little bit about these people that have seen these Pleiarians. How did that happen?
One of the sightings was, there's a woman, and I know her, I've known her now for almost 9 years, Bernadette. They have what's called a night watch on the property, where people literally throughout the night hours patrol around, because there have been so many attempts, 21 attempts on Billy's life. And they know that it may not be over, so they have a couple people that are always rotating around the property. And one night it was Bernadette's turn, and she got a little tired, so she went over to sit down on the staircase that's just outside of Billy's office. Normally, when the Pleiarians come in,
listen, I wish we had time to finish the story, but the end of the show is upon us. Man, I'll tell you what, time flies. Well, you know, we just have to have you back, Michael. We just got to have you back. Folks, go visit his website. If you get either one of his films, you're going to get a free book if you put free in the order with the translations of Billy Myers' stuff. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.